Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
All righty. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It is the Derek Hunter Podcast for the 5th of August, 2021. It's a Thursday. That's right. It's a Thursday. That means tomorrow's Friday. That's all good. That's Bailey in the background standing around. How you doing, Bailey?
I got the hot dog.
Yes, you do have the hot dog. And Quinn is here, too. How are you doing, Quinn?
I am watching my video.
Yes, you are. You gave Daddy a scare this morning. You didn't. You had digestive issues again, and you vomited a little bit this morning, didn't you?
Yeah.
But you're better now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you got the poop out, and you're eating and everything, and you're not going to cost Daddy $1,400 this time like the hospital did, are you?
No.
Yeah, it'll just cost me that much in another way somehow, I'm sure. Like in shortening my life by scaring the hell out of me. Yes, Bailey, you're very sing-songy. We got an action-packed program for you today, so we're going to get right to it as I escort them out of the room, and we'll start the program. Oh, by the way, while I've got you here, tomorrow's program is already in the can. It's an excellent, excellent revisit. I've been, I tell you, it's the guest I've gotten the most follow-up emails. Well, because other guests are like famous and stuff. I guess it's kind of different. But Paul was one of the most interesting guests we ever had. Like, you know what's going on with David Limbaugh. He's out there. You can find out what's going on with him. Paul in China, the American who works in China and lives in China. We talked to him a year ago, and you go, hey, what happened to him? Bailey, right? You want to know what happened to Paul in China, don't you? Yeah, sticking out your tongue doesn't. All right, there you go. Well, that's 2-year-old for yes. So we actually got back together with Paul in China. We talked to him. I keep on pluralizing it. I talked to him on Saturday. So that's right. I worked every day this past week to put together this program. And it's an excellent interview. Insights to China. You know, you can sit here and listen to people comment about how things are in China, how things should be in China, and what the people want in China. But somebody who actually lives there and knows the people is able to give you the inside information that you're not going to get even from the most learned of American media outlets. So Paul in China is back tomorrow. You're going to like it. Tell your friends. Gather the kids around. And it's a great interview, and I'm really appreciative of Paul taking the time. Also, don't forget about the Curse program at patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast, where I'll cover whatever happens between now and then, because tomorrow's show is all about Paul and China. Thank you for listening. Now we'll get on with the show as I get rid of the kids out of the room. The ever-changing goalposts are on the news today. The ever-changing goalposts of what constitutes herd immunity. I say now, with the Delta variant, herd immunity threshold is above 80%. We got to get above 80% to get herd immunity now. It was just above 50%, then it was 70%. And as we reached those goals as a society, they weirdly came up with new and creative ways to say, here's another one. Nope, we were wrong about that last calculation. Now we're doing this. And what was it? What was it? What's the science? This is the people of science. Should they not be the ones out there leading the way? Science? Science doesn't hide. But President Fauci is the one who declared that he was basically making it up about the threshold for herd immunity. And he was basing it off of what people thought sounded good. And as they got to it. So why would anybody believe 80%? As if we're at 70% now. And you got to figure, considering, now this is just, I'm speculating here, but it makes sense, which is why the media doesn't bother to do it. you need 10% more of the people to reach what would constitute herd immunity, according to the latest estimates. If you look at people who have natural immunity, the hundreds of thousands of people, millions, really, who have contracted COVID over the course of the last year and a half. Add to that what we're told is the contagious nature, the extra contagious nature of the Delta variant floating around. It's the most prevalent variant everywhere. It's everywhere now. And you just have to look at it, and if it comes at you, unless you're out there for justice. If you're out there protesting for justice or something, then it's okay. But otherwise, if you look at this thing cross-eyed, it's going to come and get you. Well, if that's the case, then we should be well above 80%, theoretically. Theoretically. I haven't seen an explanation as to why we are not above 80%. I do see a whole bunch of pushes, which doesn't really make a lot of sense, to get people who have natural immunity from infection, to get them vaccinated. I don't understand that. The focus should be on the people who are vulnerable. The people who are vulnerable are the people who are unvaccinated and haven't had it. Okay? That's that. But instead, they're wasting all their time and energy on these things that seem insignificant, that seem wrong-headed. Now, you can oftentimes look at something and get the wrong sense of it, or think, well, that doesn't make any sense. I don't understand this. And then you can have that aha moment where it all does fall into place. But you can't have that aha moment if nobody's willing to talk to you about it, like an adult, and explain it. Instead, nobody in this administration is willing to, and nobody in the administration in the media is willing to have a serious discussion with people as adults going, hey, this is why. Here, let me lay it out for you. Here, let me show it to you. Instead, we got a Friday night document dump from the Biden administration about the latest CDC recommendation, which is ridiculous. You don't put things out you want the world to know on Friday night. You put things out you don't want the world to look at on Friday night. And even the so-called experts in the media said, this data doesn't add up. But you notice that's been memory-holed. All the people that were questioning the latest mask order from the, mask recommendation from the CDC, they have moved on. The media, you know, even the New York Times said, this doesn't add up. And then the media said, but we shall shut up and obey. And since then, they have shut up and obeyed because they're good dogs. They want to sleep inside tonight. So you have this weird situation where the people, supposedly with the information, the people supposedly with the knowledge, with the expertise, the people we're supposed to listen to, won't make a case. They just give orders. And that, I think, is the biggest problem that we have in this country when it comes to the vaccine. If you want people vaccinated, you don't badger them into it. You don't threaten them into it. You try and explain why it's a good thing, why it should be, and then to go, oh, okay, well, then that makes perfect sense. Especially if you are running around screaming from the mountaintop that you are the party of science and you have science on your side. People can understand it. The left doesn't have much respect for individuals, so they don't really care about this. And also, another big problem that these people have, these lefties have, is they keep contradicting themselves. I want to play a clip here of the National Institutes of Health director, Francis Collins. He's talking about masking around children and masking, blah, blah, blah. You know that old routine. But he's talking about it, and he goes on to say that since children under the age of 12 can't get vaccinated yet, they're getting really eager and excited at the prospect of being able to stick kids. But since they can't do that yet, they recommend, Francis Collins recommends, that parents wear masks and children wear masks at home around each other. I'm not kidding. He says it directly. Listen to it for yourself.
It's clear that this variant is capable of causing serious illness in children. You have heard those stories coming out of Louisiana pediatric ICUs where there are kids as young as a few months old who are sick from this. That is rare. Certainly younger people are less likely to fall ill. But anybody who tries to tell you, you don't have to worry about it if you're a young, healthy person, there's many counterexamples all around us now. Well, so, yeah, you do need to think about it. And that's the reason why the recommendations are for kids under 12 that they avoid being in places where they might get infected, which means recommendations of mask wearing in schools, and that at home, parents of unvaccinated kids should be thoughtful about this. And the recommendation is to wear masks there as well.
Hmm. You hear that? Children and around at home. Now, upon hearing that, obviously didn't cause much of a stir on CNN because they don't question things like that. But the Nation heard that. You should be wearing masks at home if you have children at home. If you're an adult, even if you're vaccinated, wear masks around your kids. Well, that's not anywhere near what the CDC has said. That's not anywhere near what the CDC has ever said or will ever say. So you're looking at a situation where you have this mess, and what do you do about it? What do you do about it? He released a statement via Twitter. Quote, "Let me clarify that the masking message I garbled on New Day this morning, vaccinated parents who live in communities with high COVID transmission rates should mask when out in public indoor settings to minimize risk to their unvaccinated kids. No need to mask at home." That's not a clarification. That's not a clarification. That is a complete and total opposite of what he'd been saying. That is a 100% or more than 180 degree turnaround from what he'd said. He said, wear masks at home if you have kids. You want to look for why it is that some people don't trust the government, any government, and why they're not lining up to get this vaccine. Look no further than what these people are saying. Look no further than what these people are screaming from the mountaintops and then have to quote-unquote walk back. Oopsie-daisy, what can I say? What can I do? How do you live with that? When you have, his name's Francis Collins, Francis Collins, saying parents got to wear a mask around your kids at home, and then having to come back and say, that thing I said clearly, plain as day, I didn't really mean it clearly, plain as day. I meant it as sort of a vague collection of suggestions. I don't even know what the hell they're trying to claim he said. It's just saying, no. His walk back said, this is what he said after his statement again. Walk back. Let me clarify that masking message that I garbled on the New Day this morning. He didn't garble it. You were quite explicit. Vaccinated parents who live in communities with high COVID transmission rates should mask when out in public indoor settings to minimize the risk of their unvaccinated kids. No need to mask at home. Well, which is it? Okay, this is the problem with these people, is their message is literally all over the place. They have no consistency whatsoever. It is either this thing is spreading like wildfire and you must protect everybody, so mask up, or don't worry about your kids. It's horrible for kids. It's starting to it impacts kids, so be wary of kids. Get the shot because of kids. But don't worry about your kids at home. Don't worry about masking up. If adults can get it and adults can transmit it to kids, then should you not be going, what in the hell? We need to watch out. We need to protect these kids. If you just think about this message, if you can call it a message, logically and rationally, every little bit of it falls apart. The worst messengers in the world are supposedly the world's greatest experts on the issue. it's amazing to watch. Now, yeah, there are some people in this country who just go, well, the government told me to do something, therefore I'll go do it. But there are other people in this country who say the government told me to do something and therefore I will never do it. And those people you aren't going to reach. But there's another slice of that pie, the unvaccinated pie, that says, you know, I need more information. And when the information is coming out fast and furious and flowing left and right, but is contradicted by somebody else, another so-called expert, or completely negated, just flipped around on its head, or disavowed a couple of hours after it was given, then you sit there and you go, what in the hell? Why should I trust you when you can't even trust yourself? What in the hell would I waste my time on this for? It's amazing watching, and it's sad because I, like everybody, I want to put this thing behind us. I desperately want to put this thing behind us. I think everybody wants to put this thing behind us. But everything we've been told to do by the so-called experts, people have been doing. And then they come back and say, well, now do something else. Don't wear masks. Wear masks. Wear double masks. Wear triple masks. You don't have to wear masks anymore. You should probably put the masks back on. Everybody wear a snorkel. Don't leave your house. Mask around your kids. Oh, no, don't worry about masking around your kids. None of it makes sense because none of it is consistent. With none of it consistent, how in the hell can anybody be expected to follow it? You can't be expected to follow it. This is like the most annoying game of Simon Says ever, where people are just simply going, well, I'm going to see what I can get them to do. I'm going to see how far I can push them. I want to see what I can get them to listen to me on. And the problem with that is, oh, it's all fun and games and people will follow you for a while. But the problem is eventually people go, you know what, Chicken Little, the sky didn't fall. You know what? I can't keep playing this game. All right. I was promised X if I did Y, and I did Y, and now you're taking away X again from me. So you want to know the biggest threat to the country and to people's health? It isn't the Delta variant, although that's serious. The biggest threat is the people who are supposed to be the so-called experts, the ones looking out for us, the people whose job it is to have our best interests at heart, to be the smart ones, to be the ones to lead us through this. They're not in any way, shape, or form doing that. They're doing a massive, massive disservice. When you have the President of the United States and the Vice President of the United States out there saying you must get vaccinated, you got to get vaccinated, and you have the candidates, Joe Biden and candidate Kamala Harris, saying, well, if Donald Trump comes out with a vaccine, I don't know that I would trust. I'm not sure I would take that. I'm not sure I would advise anybody. And you have all this thing, and those moments are memorable. You want it, the left, for some reason, wants to blame, well, not for some reason, we know why. They want to blame Republicans, particularly Trump-supporting Republicans, that for the spread of the virus and for vaccine hesitancy. Now, nothing could be further from the truth. The demographics of the people who are vaccine hesitant, the demographics of the people who haven't been vaccinated yet are pretty clear that they are not, by and large, shall we say, Republican voters and certainly not Trump supporters. But it doesn't matter. In New York City, not a lot of Trump supporters. I think Donald Trump got 20 to 25% of the vote. Not a whole hell of a lot to hang your hat on there. And only 33% of New York City's black citizens are vaccinated. That ain't Trump. These people aren't going, I hate Trump. I hate Trump. I'll never listen to that. Oh, but he did say this one thing. Even though Donald Trump is fully vaccinated, Donald Trump is out there screaming to get vaccinated. He's out there taking credit for the vaccines every chance he gets. But no, somehow he's leading an anti-vax revolt. Does that make any sense to anybody? That's the problem, is nothing of what these people say makes any sense. Doesn't stop them from saying it because they don't care. They're not held accountable for anything. It's got to be good to be a Democrat. I mean, you have to live with yourself. That's kind of tough. But other than that, get away with just about anything you want. And nobody calls you out on it. In that sense, it's got to be. You remember Cori Bush? Cori Bush, she's the racist member of the House of Representatives out of St. Louis. She loves complaining about being a victim. Horrible, horrible, horrible victim. Horrible. She's been elected to Congress. Such a victim. Maybe she failed on her way up to Congress. I don't know how that works, but apparently Cori Bush seems to think it would. She got a victory yesterday. That's kind of funny because the White House really screwed this up. If you want to get down and dirty, if you care about the eviction moratorium, which you should, because it's really just a complete bastardization of government power. It's problematic on many, many levels. And it's a nosedive from which it's really nearly impossible to pull up from. How do you pull out of this nosedive? Well, the Centers for Disease Control had initially issued an eviction moratorium. And eventually the Supreme Court got around to saying that you really can't do that. You don't have the authority. There's nothing in statute, nothing in law, nothing passed by Congress that says you can declare that the Centers for Disease Control can suddenly usurp property rights. Doesn't make any sense. Just on its face, it doesn't make any sense, right? So the Biden administration knew this because the Supreme Court declared this about 3 months ago. So they had 3 months. They didn't wipe out the existing eviction moratorium, because the Supreme Court is very wishy-washy and kind of worthless on these things. I love it. They don't like to appear political. Oh, so you can just allow the Constitution to be trampled because you don't want to appear political. All right. Noted, I guess. Congratulations and thanks. Not really sure how that works, but they allowed the existing moratorium to expire, the Supreme Court did, saying, you know, if you want to do this again, which is weird, but if you want to do this again, Congress has to act and the president has to sign it. You can do this, but you have to do it legally. You know, crazy idea. Do it via the Constitution. You guys know the Constitution. It's the document you swear an oath to every time you win re-election. To preserve, protect, and defend. Yeah, that document. You need to adhere to that. Do the prescribed legislative process. That would be the way to go. Well, Democrats didn't like that. For some reason, Democrats, actually, the eviction moratorium probably would not have passed the House of Representatives or the Senate because it's not all that popular. It sounds great. It sounds wonderful. But there are real people out there being hurt by it. And by real people, I mean the landlords. I mean the people who have the property to begin with. The people who have bills to pay. Instead, the Democrats just kind of let it go. They ignored it. They went on vacation. Actually, the House of Representatives. Did you know the House of Representatives is on 6 months recess? 6 months. I mean, they can call them back at any time. And you sit there and you go, well, wouldn't that be expensive? And yeah, it'll be expensive. They all have to fly back from all across the country. That's wildly expensive. But, it's not their money. It's our money. What do they care? So they're perfectly happy to go home and sit there for 6 weeks. And, you know, I can't go out and talk to the human beings because that's COVID, Delta variant. I can't go talk to people. So they get a 6 month vacation or 6 week vacation. Who knows? It'll end up being 6 months. But so they're not there. They're not in Washington, D.C. to pass anything. So what happened is Cori Bush, St. Louis representative, went down to the caps of the Capitol, the steps of the Capitol, and camped out with a giant Costco-sized box of Oreos. She's an equal opportunity devourer because she got the regular Oreos and the white Oreos. And she woke up. She slept one night out on the steps, allegedly. Woke up crying about the plight of people who are about to be evicted because the eviction moratorium was coming undone and the Centers for Disease Control hadn't extended it. Even though, again, the Supreme Court had explicitly said the Centers for Disease Control cannot extend the eviction moratorium. You have no right to do that. You have no power. There's no statutory authority for the Centers for Disease Control to come out and say, hey, those property rights, forget about it. No, No. Instead, the Centers for Disease Control, the Biden administration, because the Biden administration dropped the ball. They waited until about 3 days ago, or 3 days before the extension, expired, and said, you guys should probably extend the eviction moratorium. And like, well, we're already on vacation. Nancy Pelosi didn't care enough to call back Congress into an emergency session. She didn't give a damn. So they just ignored the whole thing. So then after the eviction notification or eviction moratorium ended, the Centers for Disease Control. Now, remember, what are we told about the CDC? The CDC is not a political entity. It is not a political organization. My God, it perhaps is the last bastion of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship in all of Washington, D.C. It's amazing how these liberals build up organizations, build up entities, build up people as something they are not. And it's usually right before they smack you upside the head with it. The CDC's nonpartisan. And now they've overstepped their bounds, expressly going against the ruling of the Supreme Court because they don't give a damn. What are they going to do? You got James Comey. Remember, he was the last honest man in Washington. He's a hero. He's a wonderful man, a man of integrity. Everybody who works with James Comey was talking about how much integrity James Comey had, especially James Comey. And then you find out all these things that he knew he was lying. He was in on the deep state garbage and lying to Congress about it, lying to the media about it, lying to the public about it in his book. And you go, oh, well, he's the most honest man in Washington. Then you've got what? Robert Mueller. Robert Mueller is a pillar of integrity. There is perhaps no man on the face of the earth that has more integrity. He was tasked with one thing and he did it. He looked into Russian collusion, found nothing, wrote a report that said there was no Russian collusion. But I believe there was obstruction of justice because what didn't happen, I wasn't able to fully investigate what didn't happen. I felt as though what I was investigating, which didn't happen, which I discovered didn't happen, I felt as though my investigation was somehow impeded. And none of that makes any sense. It's incredibly stupid. But that's how the left works. That's how it is. Mueller then became a drooling moron when he came up to testify before Congress. Like, this is the man with the most integrity, one of the brightest minds in all of law enforcement across the country. This is the guy. And again, the CDC is, you know, there's nonpartisan. There's no partisan actor at all at the Centers for Disease Control. So Democrats stage a couple of publicity stunts, and what happens? The Centers for Disease Control, which Joe Biden had already said does not have the authority. Joe Biden read the Supreme Court, or at least had the Supreme Court decision read to him and explained to him. Joe Biden said unequivocally, the CDC does not have the authority to do this. Sorry. The CDC went and did it. But more than that, and this is what makes it extra frightening and really damaging to the Constitution and terrifying, really, because the very same people who are cheering this are the same people who were, over the last 4 years, told you what? Donald Trump is a tyrant. Donald Trump is a history's greatest monster. He's a dictator in training. You watch out for him. He's trying to usurp your rights, and he'll do it. He'll do it. I swear he'll do it. We've got to impeach him 17 times because he is a tyrant out there. And Donald Trump did nothing. Donald Trump did not make declarations. He did not rule by decree. Joe Biden did. Joe Biden is. Barack Obama did. And now the CDC comes out with a new 60-day eviction moratorium. And they have imposed criminal penalties on landlords who do not adhere to the will of the CDC. Now, do you remember an election where the CDC leadership was on the ballot anywhere? Where anybody from the CDC was on it? No, you don't. These are unelected bureaucrats. These are the very definition of the deep state, of the powerful. There's a potential $100,000 fine and 1 year in jail if an eviction that results in death. Or I'm sorry, it doesn't result in death. It's a $250,000 fine and a year in jail if an evicted person dies, according to the declaration of the Centers for Disease Control. Now, where does the CDC get the power to do this? There's nowhere. Nowhere. They just want it. So they don't have the authority to impose an eviction moratorium, yet they did it. And now they've added serious punishments, up to a year in prison, maybe two, maybe more, minimum of a year in prison. If somebody doesn't die, you get $100,000 and a year in jail. $250,000 fine if somebody does die and a year in jail. From the Centers for Disease Control, not one member of Congress has voted on this. No elected official has voted on this. No human being has voted on this, except for maybe inside the deep state bureaucracy. They are now in charge. The very same people who are screaming from the mountaintop, oh, Donald Trump is a tyrant, he's a monster, he's going to kill us all, he's a threat to our republic and a very threat to our democracy, are doing what? They're either cheering this because they are elected Democrats, or they are silent about the implications of this because they're unelected Democrats with press credentials. Either way, it's disturbing. Either way, it's very problematic. Very problematic. Now, what's hilarious about all of this election or eviction election moratorium? Democrats would love to have an election moratorium, but they're going to start with an eviction moratorium. What's hilarious is the very same people who are like, Donald Trump is Hitler Jr. Watch out, whatever he's doing, it's bad, it's bad, it's bad. CNN, their version, their coverage of this story is written by Stephen Collinson. Stephen Collinson is one of the White House correspondents for the cable news network. So he covers the Biden White House. This gives you a sense of the flavor of the coverage that the Biden administration can expect on this. Obviously, I mean, when the Biden administration is saying, well, what you want us to do is unconstitutional, and then they go ahead and do it anyway, it kind of lets you know that they think it's unconstitutional, that they know it's unconstitutional. And the very people who are screaming tyranny, tyrant, tyranny, 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 not tyranny, 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 are now writing pieces like this from Stephen Collinson, CNN. Headline, Biden shows he's ready to make drastic moves in COVID-19 fight, dash, dash, even if he's not sure they're legal. Isn't that lovely? Even if he's not sure they're legal, he's willing to take a stand even if it's not legal. That's how much Joe Biden cares. Oh, he's such a hero. Not all heroes wear capes, but apparently all of them try to force themselves on low-level staffers in hallways in the Senate. She writes, even President Joe Biden doesn't know whether his new federal eviction moratorium for renters is legal or sustainable. But crushing humanitarian and political pressures left him no choice but to take a chance on an emergency move. Oh, well, Joe Biden would prefer, given his choices, he would prefer not to violate the Constitution. But in the name of helping people, he kind of has to. And that's what makes him the hero. Not maybe the one that we want, but certainly the hero that we need for these times. It's ridiculous. It continues. The new U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention scheme was announced after the White House, hampered by a Supreme Court ruling and Congress's failure to act. I love it. Hampered by the poor White House. It's just put upon. The poor put upon White House can't catch a break. The stupid Supreme Court keeps standing in their way from stopping them from doing unconstitutional things. But the important part is Congress's failure to act. Congress could have acted. Congress had plenty of time to act. They can whine and complain about, well, Joe Biden didn't say anything until like 3 days before the end. Yeah, you have a job to do. You're co-equal branches of government. You shouldn't wait around like a good dog hoping to get a milk bone when the president tells you to act. If you see something, say something or something, right? So Biden himself said on Tuesday that the new moratorium may not be constitutional and is essentially an attempt to buy time to get backlog funding out of state coffers into the pockets of renters and landlords alike. Yeah, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not sure what I'm doing is constitutional, but I'm doing it anyway. That, ladies and gentlemen, right there, I don't hate to say it, is an impeachable offense. You, as President of the United States, swear an oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, right? To the best of your ability. Now, maybe Joe Biden can get off on a technicality saying, look, I have no ability. I can't do anything. I'm terrible. I'm really dumb. I have no ability. This is literally violating the Constitution is the best I can do in defending it. That's all I got. I doubt it, but he could try that. But this is the very definition of an impeachable offense. Treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors, like deliberately, knowingly, openly, and declaring to the world, I am about to do something that I believe to be unconstitutional. But I'm going to do it anyway, because who's going to stop me? This is a threat. This is the actual threat to the Republic. If the Constitution, if the co-equal branches of government, if they can all just be swept aside because they're inconvenient at a particular moment politically, then they have no meaning. Then private property has no meaning. You don't need your property. Just shut up and do what the government says. Now, what the Biden administration could have done, it's pretty simple, pretty easy, and it wouldn't require tyrannical actions and willfully unconstitutional actions. They could have used the bully pulpit. They could have used the White House. God knows they have a favorable press corps that would have helped with this. Of course, they would have had to have started this a little earlier. But if it doesn't involve illegal aliens and helping illegal aliens get in the country, they don't seem to pay attention to it or care about it. But they could have gone out there and said, look, landlords, we understand that you're in a pinch. The money's coming through the pipeline. We just ask you that you please not do this. In particularly egregious cases, and I'll give you some examples of those, then you can go ahead and evict, because we can't stop you. But we would prefer if you would wait just a little bit. That would have been perfectly legal, perfectly easy to do for this White House. Well, not easy. Joe would have had to have read it off a teleprompter. But they could have done that, and I bet it would have worked in 95% of the cases. Instead, you get absolutely unconstitutional action that is dangerous. It is bizarre, and I really do believe that ultimately what these leftists are trying to damage, what they would like to destroy, is capitalism. So you say you can't control your property. You have no rights to your property. You still got to pay all the bills. You're still responsible for all your property. If some degenerate who is quote-unquote renting but not paying you any rent slips and falls on your property, you're screwed. You're still going to have to pay through the nose to fix their baby broken toe. But it doesn't matter. But that's kind of just how the left always is when it comes to these issues, when it comes to property rights. They're in favor of squatters left and right across the country. The BLM Antifa mutant mob goes, oh, this is a house over here. We're just going to take it over in the name of justice. And like, well, that's not your property. Doesn't matter. We've got it for justice. And they'll hold it for long. Hell, they held a chunk of Seattle, not just a house, but a chunk of it for a while. And then what finally caused the government to act, wasn't the concept that they were usurping private property rights from the people in the blocks that were trapped inside Chaz and Chop. They didn't give a damn about them. It was the embarrassment of two murders. It was the embarrassment. It wasn't the two murders themselves. It was that the two murders were kind of being made into a big deal, particularly by conservative media. Like, oh, geez. Yeah, you know, remember Jenny Durkin, the mayor of Seattle, said, ooh, we're going to have the summer of love out here. That's how long this can go. She told that to Fredo Cuomo, as a matter of fact, on CNN. It'll be the summer of love. When asked how long this could go on, how long the autonomous zone could last. Ooh, I don't know, man. We could have a summer of love. And then within a week, like, two people were murdered. And then it took still a couple of days for Jenny Durkin to go, I guess they're going to talk about these people who were murdered. And the fact that they were young and black. Okay. Go break it up. And then they went in and broke it up. And protect the people who lived in the zone that had been taken over were complaining to the police. They were calling the police. They were on the media. They were saying, please, you know, you need to come in here. These people are threatening us. These people are bad people. And the administration out there just said, well, you know, bad is relative. the odds of you personally being shot by these people is very slim. So maybe try not to be such a white supremacist and complain about this and just let it go. All right. You know, you can learn how to tuck and roll, can't you? Come on. That's their view toward private property. And even the New York Times, surprisingly, now this is about a month old. It's July 9th, so not quite a month. They had a piece on this tangentially. The headline, "A landlord says her tenants are terrorizing her. She can't evict them." Now, what most people don't realize, because you think, well, landlords, you think it's some massive company. You drive around and you see like a barren mall and you're like, oh, for leasing information, call this, and it's some company up there. And like, oh, there's all these companies own this. And you see big apartment buildings and you go, big companies own that. And by and large, you're right. When it comes to massive things like that, the big properties, the big buildings, 200 units, those are owned by companies. But pretty much where I used to live in Baltimore, in the Mount Vernon area, pretty much most of Baltimore, is small landlords. And it was a row house, a big row house. It was cut up into 9 apartments. I knew the guy who owned it. He doesn't own it anymore. He got out, luckily for him. But I knew he lived down in Florida. He was a young guy. He used to live in Baltimore. That's how he got involved in this. We became friends. We talked every once in a while. He's a big lefty, and we'd argue politics constantly. But he would call me up to argue politics. It was one guy. And when he had to deal with something, sometimes he'd ask me to, you know, fix stuff in the building because he knew I could do it. And so I would do it. And other times he would say, "Would watch out for this. This is happening. Somebody's going to be in there to take care of this." And, you know, sometimes it was just somebody shooting heroin in the service area of the house, which since my apartment was in the basement, it was just on the other side of the wall. I could hear them through the fan in my bathroom. So that was a little disconcerting. But we had a good relationship. He was not rich. And he eventually sold the property. But if we had just stopped paying rent, he would have been screwed. The city would have still gone after him. The city would probably own that house now. But this story in the New York Times is indicative. It's people who rent out their basement because that's how they help pay their mortgage. Or, you know, rent out a couple of floors. In New York City, it is wildly expensive to live. To own a row house, you've got to pay through the nose for a row house. $1 million for a cheap beat up row house. Then you got to rehab it. I don't know. Most people who live in New York, I don't know, actually know how they do it. But a lot of them do it by saying, okay, I'll live up on the top 2 floors and we'll rent out the bottom 2 floors. And that will help us pay our mortgage. It's smart. It's brilliant, actually. It works for them. But the last year has screwed that up unbelievably. And it already was hard enough where you know, in liberal jurisdictions, in most of them, it's nearly impossible to evict anybody. Really, the renter's rights are far and away superior to the owner's rights. It's just ridiculous. You can go in and you can refuse to ever pay a bill, and it will take 6 months to a year to get you out. And many, many court cases, and the court will say, well, you got to give them time, and oh, you got to give them leeway, and you got to do this. And this was before COVID, where it was nearly impossible to evict anybody. I don't know why anybody would go into the landlord business. They do. But this story in the Times, for more than a year, Vanny Mangrel, a physician assistant at a Connecticut hospital, called relatives to tell them that their loved ones were dying of COVID-19, watched as patients gasped their final breath, and feared that she herself would get sick. Ms. Mangle found no respite from stress when she went home. She is a landlord who rents the basement and first floor apartments in her home in Queens. And for the past year, conflicts with her tenants have poisoned the atmosphere in her house. Can't get rid of them. Can't get them out. The first floor tenants have not paid rent in 15 months. Bang on the ceiling below her bed at all hours for no apparent reason and yell, curse, and spit at her, Miss Mangrel said. A tenant in the basement apartment also stopped paying rent, keyed Miss Mangrel's car, and dumped packages meant for her by the garbage. After Miss Mangrel got an order of protection and then a warrant for the tenant's arrest, the woman and her daughter moved out. That's what it took. woman, one of her tenants moved out. Okay, all it took was a restraining order and a warrant for somebody's arrest, and then she was able to feel safe and comfortable in her own home. Now, these are the people that the AOCs of the world are saying. These are the greedy landlords. Now, this woman is in Queens. Presumably, she is a constituent of AOC. All told, Miss Mangrel, who has captured many of her tenants' actions on surveillance video, so it's not just her making wild claims, has not only lost sleep from the tension inside her two-story home, but also $36,600 in rent income. Quote, it's been horrendous. What am I supposed to do? Live like this? Question mark. So $36,000. If the tenants that are gone are responsible for half that, roughly half, maybe, let's say $20,000. The basement's probably cheaper. They're responsible for $20,000 in rent for the first floor. And the person in the basement still isn't paying. If the person in the basement gets the help, quote unquote, the help from the federal government to pay their rent, A, what do you think the odds of them doing it are? If they're this much of a degenerate, what do you think the odds of them applying for that money are? Because the money doesn't go to the landlords. The money goes to the worthless tenants. The other ones that are gone, do you think they care about making their landlord whole? If you're willing to act that way, do you really worry about your credit rating? Do you sit around and go, well, we better make good on that 20 grand we owe our old landlord that we hated and spit on and swore at and everything. We got to make good on that because otherwise our 580 credit might go down to 570. We better, no. You're never going to recoup that money. This woman is out that money. She will never be made whole. Even if the federal government says, all right, well, we're going to make an exception. We're going to pay you instead of the degenerates you rent to, we're going to give the money to you to make you whole. That won't be whole. She'll never be able to. How would you ever trust anybody again? How would you ever go? Okay, great. I'm made whole for the past year. But in order to keep living here, I have to have tenants. And I can't bring myself to, you know, when you want to talk about PTSD, I can't bring myself to rent to anybody else. Ever. No way, no how, no. This woman is screwed. She's not BlackRock. She's not some huge multinational corporation backed with Chinese money buying up properties across the United States or some faceless rental property company. She's a human being. She smartly said, I'm going to buy a house. She's 31 years old. She owns a house in Queens, in New York. And she figured out, I can afford this if I rent this out. She did everything right. And the government is punishing her. How screwed up is that? Can you figure out how screwed up? There's no end to how screwed up that is. This story out of New York is typical. And it's... this is who the Democrats are damaging. And this is bizarre because you would think that, you know, these are the people they claim to care about. But what they're really doing is running blocker for the wildly irresponsible. Because so much of what Democrats do, so much of progressivism is insulating people from the consequences of their actions, particularly bad people from the consequences of their actions. Oh, defund the police. Well, who's that help? It helps criminals. No cash bail. Who does that help? It helps criminals. Let's get everybody out of jail. Who does that help? It helps criminals. The social fabric is torn apart by these people because their priorities are not, they don't run on them. They don't say, well, if you elect me, I will make sure that violent gangbangers, drug dealers, and everybody else never see the inside of a prison. They don't do that. They lie and they promise and they hold out this false carrot of utopia right this way. The problem isn't that that there's bad people. No. The people selling heroin, they're not bad people. The people shooting people from another gang who are selling heroin, they're not bad. It's society. It's systemic racism that caused that guy to shoot that guy in the head. And then, you know, a couple of other people in the head too by accident because they were sort of near him as he was driving by. That's why it's all society's fault. Well, that's horrible. That's awful. That's terrible. It sets an awful... It leads you to Chicago, where you're like, oh, 1,000 people got shot over last month in Chicago. No big deal. Hey, what are you going to do? And people who do the right thing end up getting screwed, like this woman in Queens. Mangrel, her last name is Mangrel, said in the past, in the years past, Ms. Mangrel, 31, could have taken her tenants to housing court and sought to evict them. But during the pandemic, the federal government and many states, including New York, imposed eviction moratoriums to protect renters who lost their income. Now, did they lose their income or were they just degenerates? You don't know. Moratoriums have been widely praised by housing advocates. Housing advocates are people who just want free houses for everybody. Of course they're going to praise them. By housing advocates for preventing millions of people from becoming homeless. Yeah, and a whole bunch of people from getting, now they're getting PlayStation 4s. Said the, at the same time, those broad protections have created tremendous financial and emotional strain for smaller landlords like Miss Mangrel, who often lack the deep pockets to survive without payments. And in New York City, those small landlords are an estimated 28% of the city's roughly 2.3 million rental units. So there you go. There are 2.3 million rental units are owned by landlords who have fewer than five properties, according to justfixit.nyc, a technology company that tracks property ownership. Landlord, they're screwing over their own base. And they're screwing over Americans just trying to get a slice of the American dream. No wonder the left runs around and goes, the American dream is dead. The American dream is dead. They killed it. The American dream is to buy a home and have a home and build equity and through that build wealth and blah, blah, blah. And they say, Democrats come out and say, the American dream is dead. It's a myth. It's a, yeah. Yeah. You're the one with the pillow over the American dream's face. So you're kind of the reason for it. And the Biden administration just said, well, we're going to put a second pillow over. It won't be a my pillow, but we're going to put a second pillow over the face of the American dream just to make sure it's dead for sure. It's pathetic. Sickening. It's progressive. I keep reading this New York Times. I get a little further into it. You find I was slightly off. The money doesn't go to the degenerates. Thank God. One smart thing, although I'm sure that the degenerates will find a way to get a big slice of it. They say landlords can seek pandemic financial assistance, and the federal government has allocated $46.5 billion for emergency rental relief. But the aid has been slow to flow to property owners, and it comes with certain strings attached. Now, slow to flow to property owners. That is the fault of the localities. That is the fault of the states. They haven't bothered to set anything up. They've been flush with cash from other things. They're going, oh my goodness, federal government keeps driving up with Brinks trucks and dumping them out on our front lawn. What do we do with all this money? And so they just ignore what is supposedly, now this is supposed to be, a moral crisis, an imperative moment in American history. Millions upon millions, they say up to 11 million people, 8 to 11 million people could be evicted. To which I would say, how could between 8 and 11 million people be evicted if Joe Biden's running around talking about how wonderful the economy is doing and how great it is and the stock market this and that and the other thing? I'm old enough to remember that a year ago, the stock market as a barometer of the economy was looked at as ridiculous and absurd because, well, that's just Donald Trump caring about rich people. Now it's, but still. Seems to be the answer from the left. Say, now these are the strings that the federal government attaches it. It requires the landlord to allow a tenant to remain, so you can't get your degenerate tenants out. This is how screwed up it is. If you want to get somebody evicted and you go, look, I think most people would recognize, like, boss, I'm not paying my rent because I lost my job. I can't pay it. The government shut down my place of work. I can't do it. And I think landlords would understand because you could couple that with saying, but here's the federal program that can get you whole and take care of the rent. I want you to be whole. I'm sure there are some good tenants out there doing this. But then there are some jackasses who simply weren't paying their rent anyway. They weren't paying their rent anyway, and the eviction moratorium shut them down too. Shut their evictions down too. And those are the people who should be evicted. Those are the people who should be catapulted out of their house, out of somebody else's property. But because the government doesn't say things like, oh, you know, if you weren't paying your rent before, you got to go. They just go, here's a piece of spandex, one size fits all. It's all good. Everybody be quiet. Take it, wear it, wear your unitard and shut up. That's the way government functions. It's insane. So you get the good people trapped by circumstance and screwed up policies from their government lumped in with the degenerates who bake meth in their basement and think nothing about, being a complete jackass to their landlords and don't give a whit about property rights or anything like that. So if you want to be made whole, you have to agree to keep the degenerate pieces of garbage who you've been trying to get rid of for probably 2 years. Because like I said, eviction can take 6 months, a year, longer. And if you started the eviction process before the pandemic, well, this wiped the slate clean. There's a nice little safety zone for these lunatic monsters who you want to get rid of. Now the government says, well, we'll make you whole, at least for the past year, as they're pounding more holes in your walls, as they're smoking crack in there, whatever it is. We'll make you whole for the past year, but you got to promise that you won't evict them. And you won't raise the rent for a year after the aid is received. So those are your two options. Doesn't matter. Your bills are coming due. You've got to find a way to make yourself whole retroactively somehow. Try and make yourself right with property taxes and everything. And they're going, hey, man, you got to keep the degenerates and you can't raise your rent. Your payments can go up, but you can't raise the rent. So a lot of tenants are going, yeah, I'm not going to deal with this. I'm not going to go down this road because this is awful. This is terrible. Miss Mangrel, the woman I told you about, she has not applied for those reasons. Well, because, you know, she had people threatening her. She wouldn't be able to get rid of them if she did this. Further complicating matters, the Times writes, while the moratorium technically allows landlords to evict unruly tenants, a review of court records and interviews with the landlords suggests that in practice, it is all but impossible to do so. Remember how I told you that all the rights rest with the tenants and not the landlords? Well, because why? Because liberal politicians run these cities. Liberal politicians make these laws. And liberal politicians come in and say, oh, look at this sad tale of woe. This mother of seven, this single mother of seven, she's losing her house because the evil landlord will not understand that she lost her job and she can't make ends meet. And you sit there and you appeal to people's emotions. You tug at those heartstrings and people will tear up and go, that's terrible. It's awful. I feel so bad for her. No one will go, yeah, but, you know, maybe she should learn to live within her means. Maybe she's got to find a way. Remember this during the housing bubble back in 2008? What happened? People with incomes of about $30,000 a year were given massive loans for houses they could nowhere near afford. Oh, here's a $500,000 loan for you. Go ahead. Why? Because, well, for the first 2 years, your payments are only about $200. Oh, well, that's totally. And then they balloon up to about $2,500. Ooh. Well, I mean, don't worry about it, though. I mean, you'll totally just refinance or figure it out at the time. And a whole bunch of dumb people said, yeah, I'll totally figure it out at the time. Let's do this. Let's do $200 a month. I'm down. I'll buy this house. Well, the bill to the piper came due. And it didn't work out it actually worked out for just about everybody except for the people who played by the rules because the government jumped in and bailed everybody out. The government's jumping in and bailing everybody out who didn't play by the rules, who hasn't lived within their means, who hasn't paid their bills, who hasn't carried their weight. And with the government sitting there with this safety net, they likely haven't even really bothered or given it much thought. When, why would you? If the government says, if you're on the top of one building and there's a 3 foot wide beam. Let's make it 3 feet wide. A 3 foot wide beam to another building that's about 100 feet away. And you've got to get off the building you're on. You're going to be very nervous. It could be very stable. 3 foot wide is, you know, you lay a ruler or a yardstick on the ground, and 3 foot wide, you think, hell, I could drive a car on this thing. It's 3 feet wide is not super narrow. You could walk down that, the average sidewalk, no problem. You're not walking down the sidewalk and falling on the grass. If you're walking down the sidewalk and just flop over on the grass all the time, you've got serious balance issues and you need to go see a doctor. But if you're put that sidewalk 100 feet in the air and you got to walk 100 feet down it, then suddenly everything changes. The whole dynamic changes. But if the government comes in and says, we're going to flood the whole thing. We're going to put water down there, make it floaty. We're going to be putting a whole bunch of rafts and everything, inner tubes. You're going to be just fine. Well, guess what? You're going to walk like you would if it were on the ground. You're going to walk recklessly. Well, much of life is that 100-foot high, 3-foot wide sidewalk with nothing but rocks and dirt down there under there. It's not 100 feet long necessarily. Sometimes it's 1,000 feet long. Sometimes it's 10 feet long. But life is a series of, am I going to cross this bridge or am I not going to cross this bridge? Am I going to take this chance or am I not going to take this chance? And if you take that chance and you make it, you should reap the benefits of that. We see that all the time in successful businesses, multi-billionaires, multi-millionaires, whatever. People getting rich for whatever reason, however they do it. And then you see it for people who choose not to. These are the people who double and triple mask and whatnot. They don't get the riches. They don't cross that bridge, or they don't cross every bridge. And sometimes even successful people go, all right, well, but that bridge, not going over that bridge. The government pollutes and bastardizes all of it. The government comes in and says, don't worry about it. Yeah, you're supposed to pay your rent. You're supposed to carry your freight, but you're not. But don't sweat it. We'll inoculate you. Even if you could pay your rent, why would you bother? If you are of that mindset, and there's a certain percentage, 5, 10% of the population, of all races, all creeds, all genders, who are simply degenerates, who just go, well, I'm going to game the system. It's the sort of people who say, it's not my job, man. It's not my job. You see what they do. You see what they're capable of. You look at these people and you just go, how do you live with yourself being that way? And they live with themselves being that way just fine. Hell, they live with themselves being that way rent-free somewhere. Because you're picking up the tab, I'm picking up the tab, we're picking up the tab. That's how it works. And all they've got to do for this is vote Democrat every couple of years. And they're told by their elected officials that they aren't the problem in society. No, no, they're not the problem in society. They're the salt of the earth. They're the victims of society, as a matter of fact. Somehow you're the victim. Well, by and large, you're not the victim. You're the perp. And I'm not saying this because I'm heartless, although I am. I'm not saying this because I don't care, although I don't. I'm saying this because it's true. There's certainly people out there who definitely need help. But there are many, many who just want to game the system. And the people who create the system, who always talk about, oh, the system's so rigged, it's so problematic. These are the very same people who actually rigged the system. If you designed a system and you complain that it's rigged against people, you designed it. who rigged it? Who rigged it? If I'm building something, nobody else is involved in it. Certainly not people who disagree with me are involved in it. Whose fault is it when that system collapses? It would be a massive design flaw, you would think. It would be. But Democrats never, never, ever make that conclusion. I don't understand people who are wildly, wildly irresponsible. And I'm somebody who, when I was younger, I was irresponsible in fits and starts, sure. But for the love of God, I never got evicted anywhere. I never was late with rent. And then you've got, you're sitting there and you're going, well, the national rent moratorium is ridiculous. This is ridiculous too, because we're supposedly last I checked, we are in a pandemic, right? Has anybody heard about this? So the governments at every level have decreed that people need help. All right. And some people do, in fact, need help. But in more cases, you hear stories of things where you're going, why do we have to pay for this crap? Now, it's never a big national reporter. It should be. It seems like if journalism were a profession that were anything like what it's supposed to, what it claims to be, that they could easily do a lot of stories on this, just do a little bit of investigation and come up with billions. I mean, they're spending trillions upon trillions of dollars, billions of dollars in waste easily. And you should, because, by the way, if you see government waste, if you see government fraud, if you see somebody ripping off the federal government and you turn them in, you get a taste of that action. You get a piece of the money that you, if somebody's ripping off billions of dollars, like just say you work for a doctor and that doctor is billing Medicare for billions of dollars, you will get a piece of that action if you point that out to the government. You get like 20% or some ridiculously high percentage of the money. People have gotten very, very rich off of being a whistleblower. But we're seeing, usually that stuff is sort of exposed by government, and it's also exposed by media, right? Sort of working hand in hand. They just hear stories and start digging and start doing, well, what's the word I'm looking for? Oh yeah, reporting. They don't do reporting anymore. And so you end up with a situation like this. This is from the Oregon Live. This is the Oregonians website out there in Portland. Their headline, Portland designates $64 million in federal aid to shelter homeless, prevent evictions, bolster small businesses. You think, oh, well, I guess, okay, that sounds normal, but the body of the text is something different. And drawing on its latest tranche of federal pandemic funds, the Portland City Council unanimously approved a massive new spending plan Wednesday geared toward helping struggling residents and catalyzing the city's economic recovery. Programs to aid those facing evictions, bolster litter removal, and build and operate 6 additional safe rest villages for the homeless are all part of the $64 million package. So there's another tent city for the homeless. Picking up litter. Wasn't litter like already taken care of? Was the city just covered in litter before the pandemic? I don't think so. Said the 6 new shelters, shelter communities for people experiencing homelessness, will consume more than 1/4 of the money. Far more than any other initiative. A quarter of $64 million for a little tent city. Said the money is part of $104 million the city received this year from the American Rescue Plan. The city council dedicated the remaining $40 million to items in this year's city budget, using nearly half of that to fill revenue gaps across the city. They have set aside money. Let's see. City officials have already devoted the city's $114 million share of the Federal CARES Act money to initiatives that prioritize historically marginalized groups such as communities of color, immigrants, and people with disabilities. Now, that's illegal. You can't use federal money to discriminate, but they are using federal money to discriminate. They're prioritizing historically marginalized groups. Now, Portland has been one of the most progressive so-called cities for my whole lifetime, probably all of yours. And good Lord, they sure love to tout how they super duper are progressive. So again, it's one of those examples that if the system is rigged out in Portland, it's the left who rigged the system. I mean, historically marginalized group. Haven't you been so tolerant and so loving and so caring for the past 50, 60, 100 years, whatever it is, that you stop discriminating against communities of color, immigrants, and people with disabilities? Or is there a problem in Portland where there's a black guy, let's go get him. There's an immigrant, we must beat him up, and they're pushing over old ladies in wheelchairs? Is that what's going on in Portland? I don't think so. But Portland is going to discriminate against their own citizens because even in a time of a pandemic, it's a woke-off. So how does this help people? It doesn't help all people. It helps some people. But are all people hurting from the pandemic? Shouldn't it just be people hurting from the pandemic? And if you can go down this far and decide, well, we're going to do this one because based on this skin color, we're going to do that, we're going to do the other thing. Maybe, just maybe, hear me out. Maybe our government is spending too much money. Maybe our government is sending too much money around. If they have this kind of time and this little need that they can, quote unquote, try to fix historical wrongs rather than try to help human beings who are in need through no fault of their own, and in fact, helping people who are in need because of fault of their own, then maybe you're doing it wrong. Maybe we're doing it wrong. And we're seeing this across the country. This isn't waste, fraud, and abuse that somebody's ripping off these monies from government. This is waste, fraud, and abuse on behalf of government, by government, for the benefit of those people in power in government. It's rather sick, to be honest with you. It's a shame, and somebody should step up and say, wait a second, you want to spend another $3.5 trillion on quote-unquote human infrastructure while the city of Portland is just one city in Oregon, and one city in the country is spending $114 million on God knows what. They're just going, you know what? Find us some gay people, some disabled people, some black people. We'll just start giving them money. We got so much money, we don't know what to do with it. Maybe, just maybe, if we are all in this together, maybe we should start acting like it. I realize that's wrong and horrible to say and probably racist to say, but I don't give a damn. It needs to be said. Shift it up here, if you don't mind. I told you yesterday about how the mayor of New York had declared that, oh, by the way, everything, you got to wear a mask if you want to do anything in New York City or be vaccinated. That's it. Those are your choices. And we don't want no unvaccinated folks around here. And that was essentially an attack, an assault on the city's minority community. The least vaccinated groups of people in New York City are Hispanics, and the most or least vaccinated group overall is black New Yorkers, which is about 33%, 33.6%, I think it was. And the Democrats didn't really care, certainly not in the media, not in New York. They were all sitting around going, oh, he's so progressive. Oh, he's so progressive. Look at what the Bill de Blasio is doing. He's so progressive. He's really going after those pro-Trump anti-vaxxers. And it's like, I don't really think that 67% of the black vote in New York are pro-Trump. I would assume that he would then have carried more than about 22% of the city. But that's just me. I think like that. But there is one Democrat kind of stepping up and saying, what in the hell, man? This isn't cool. This is out of Boston. Boston's mayor says she wants to encourage people to get vaccinated against COVID-19, but compared the idea of requiring vaccine passports to several unsavory parts of American history. The reporter, Sacchetti, whatever, posed the question to Mayor Kim Janney Tuesday after New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio announced that proof of COVID-19 vaccination will soon be required for entering restaurants, gyms, and indoor venues. The new requirement, which will be phased in over several weeks in August and September. Now, I always love these. It's an emergency declaration. I must wildly violate your rights as an American citizen. It's so damned important that you got about 6 weeks to really before we bother to kick in with this. And you're like, what? Is it an emergency? Is it just a routine emergency? I thought it was an emergency. I'm pretty sure that somebody's breaking into your house and you call 911 and say, excuse me, police, somebody's breaking into my house. Would you mind eventually, if you could, maybe sometime in the next 6 to 8 hours, swinging by my house and maybe seeing if they're still here and if I'm still alive? I don't want it. It's just a routine emergency. Don't go crazy. Certainly don't increase your carbon footprint by stepping on the gas of your vehicle, which is already a gas guzzler. Am I right? Yeah, maybe if you have somebody you could dispatch by bicycle, then I'd be interested. But otherwise, maybe we could come up with some other arrangement here. No, I don't think that's how emergencies work. said, is the most aggressive new step New York has taken yet to curb a surge in cases caused by the Delta variant. People will have to show proof that they have had at least one dose of a vaccine. Quote, the goal here is to convince everyone at this time that this is the time, de Blasio said. If we're going to stop the Delta variant, the time is now, and that means getting vaccinated right now. When Janney, mayor of Boston, was asked for her opinion on the idea, she expressed that her administration wants to encourage vaccination, but did not explicitly say whether she would consider implementing a similar policy. Quote, we want to make sure that we are giving every opportunity for folks to get vaccinated. When it comes to what businesses may choose to do, we know that those types of things are very difficult to enforce when it comes to a vaccine. She went on to compare vaccine passports or credentials to documentation requirements required during slavery and the Jim Crow era. Ooh, that's supposed to, you know, Democrats are only authorized to use that kind of language against Republicans, and she's using it against a Democrat? Uh-oh, SpaghettiOs. Yeah, that's right. Janney also drew comparisons to the so-called birtherism conspiracy theory. Quote, there's a long history in this country of people needing to show their papers, Janney said. During slavery, post-slavery, and as recently as you know what immigration and as recent as you know what immigrant population has to go through here. Whatever. We heard Trump with birth certificate nonsense. Here we have to make sure that we are not doing anything that would further create a barrier for residents of Boston or disproportionately impact biopic. Of course, this is where the left goes with everything. And biopic means Black, Indigenous, and people of color communities. Can't possibly implement anything. Which, to my mind, tells me that the mayor of Boston, she's certainly no civil libertarian. I know. But she's no civil libertarian at all. She's just an opportunist. Period. End of story. And she sees this as a chance to make herself seem big, seem important, seem to care, seem to be more progressive than the last guy. But I don't care. I love watching Democrat on Democrat violence. I could watch it all day long. I could watch these people fight amongst themselves. Like, that's the real Olympics that I want to see. But to sit there and go, well, this is... How will it... What is it... If it's an imposition on the rights of Black, Indigenous, and people of color communities, what does it matter if it's that or if it's, well, it's just an imposition on white people. So I don't care. Let's go ahead with it. Or it's just an imposition on Asian people. Boston up there, that's where Harvard is. Close to where Harvard is. Harvard discriminates against Asians left and right. You can't have too many Asians getting in here. We got to penalize them in the application process so we can diversify our classes every year in the name of tolerance or something like that. And you sit there and you go, how is that cool? How's that kosher? And they go, well, it's amazing because it depends on the situation. They always go, well, Asians haven't faced the traditional discrimination that other people of color have. Or then they'll go, when situations change or it suits their needs, they go, Asians are being attacked at a higher rate than just about anybody. And they always have that caveat, just about anybody. Because if you actually look at the data, whenever they talk about a favored group at a particular moment, they're being attacked at more higher rate than just about anybody. They always have to say just about. Because that makes it true. Because realistically, if they don't say just about, they would be lying. Because the group that actually gets attacked more than just about anybody else, than actually anybody else, sorry, is Jews. And they don't care about Jews being attacked, let's be honest. So they always have to say, well, Asians are being attacked more than just about anybody. Massive increase in anti-Asian hate crime. Way more than just about anybody. Just about, well, what does that mean? That means just about anybody. Well, just, okay, then who's more? I don't want to talk about who's more. Let's just pretend it's just about anybody. But yeah, the mayor of Boston criticizing the mayor of New York, saying that Jim Crow is back alive and well. So at least somebody out there is interested in protecting the Black residents of New York City from the tyranny of the evil white guy, Bill de Blasio. Now, Bill de Blasio loves to wrap himself up in, I'm not a racist, I can't be a racist because he married a black woman. But it's nice to see when that blows up in his face every once in a while, I think. Said the mayor continued, quote, instead, you want to lean in heavily with partnering with community organizations, making sure that everybody has access to the life-saving vaccine. As it relates to people who want to encourage their workforce to get vaccinated, we certainly support that. Now, wait a second. What do you mean you want to make sure that everybody has access to life-saving vaccines? Who doesn't have access to the... What planet do these leftists live on? Honestly, everything is sideways on their planet. Everything is screwed up and different from the way it actually is on their planet. They talk about, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that. People do... We don't have people getting access to the vaccine. It's unequal, the access. Where are you on this planet that you can't go somewhere and get the vaccine? Right now, it's in the middle of the afternoon. I could get off here and go get the vaccine right now. I know I could. You can't walk into a CVS or a grocery store or anything without somebody going, are you here for the shot? Would you like a shot while you're here? You want a shot? You need to do a shot? And I'm like, no, I just need to pick up some aspirin or something. No, but while you're here, you want a shot? You can take a shot. It's almost impossible to not get it. But they're acting as though, the left acts as though, well, you know, really, maybe some people are not getting the shots. And I'm sure this is going to be the talk whenever anybody is actually confronted with the actual data out of New York City, where they go, it's not evil whitey Trump supporters who aren't getting vaccinated. And I'll go, yeah, but that's only because they don't have access or equal access to the vaccine. I'm like, no, I don't think so. Maybe there's something else at play. Seems like there's something else at play. But again, I'm honest and intellectually curious. The left is neither of those things. So they will just sit there and hold their breath and hope to God nobody ever comes up with that realization that they're simultaneously saying, this is Jim Crow 2.0, and then saying, look, black people are too dumb to be able to find a place to get vaccinated. Joe Biden said it. He said it not that long ago. Look, you sometimes... Black people, they can't really use the internet. And you're just going, what? Where do you come up with this stuff, grand wizard? But now it's the mayor of Boston. Not saying that exact same thing, but kind of implying it. They all kind of imply it. The Democratic Party is really just varying degrees of racist dog whistles at this point. Oh, an update on a story I told you about the other day. Remember Barack Obama? If you were planning on going to Barry's big old 60th birthday party, you're allegedly being uninvited. Yes, Barack Obama. You know, he was going to have 700 people, 475 invited guests, only his closest friends. Even though, have you ever seen a news story ever written about any of his close friends? No. No, you haven't. You ever heard him talk about his clothes? Anything about his clothes? Nope, nothing. I don't think he has any friends. His family doesn't like him. All of his siblings, his father kind of traveled around the planet like Johnny Appleseed, impregnating women and ignoring them, being a real sort of degenerate human being. And his mother has passed away. She was not particularly that good of a mom, left him with the grandparents. The grandparents are gone. And so you, like, what family does Barack Obama have? He has his brother-in-law. And maybe a couple of other in-laws. Remember, his mother-in-law lived with him in the White House. So that was a pretty sweet deal for her. But they said they're now going to scale back the party because 500 people, 475-ish, and 200 servants was a bit much. It's a bit much. So now it's been scaled back to just close friends, quote, let's see. Due to the spread, this is from one of the president's spokespeople, because he couldn't possibly be speaking for himself. It is Hannah Hankins. So due to the new spread of the Delta variant over the past week, we've been hearing about this for how long? But it's just the past week. Over the past week, the president and Mrs. Obama have decided to significantly scale back the event to include only family and close friends, said the president's spokeswoman. He's appreciative of others sending their birthday wishes from afar and looks forward to seeing people soon. Now, he was catching hell and being criticized because 700 people on Martha's Vineyard. Oh, it was going to be outside, but of course we know it was going to be under tents. They're going to be under each other. You got New York City basically saying you can't leave your house if you're not vaccinated. The Obama party was, they tried to say, well, they're going to be required to be vaccinated. They're not required to be vaccinated. They're required to pinky swear. And if Steven Spielberg isn't vaccinated, are you going to be the one at the gate to say, hey, Steven, sorry, man, but we can't serve your kind in here. Or Oprah shows up and she's like, well, I haven't been vaccinated yet. I've been too busy counting money in my hermetically sealed mansion in one of them. I don't even know which one I was in. So I haven't had the vaccine yet. You're going to tell Oprah to get away? No, you're not going to tell Oprah to get away. This was a scam to begin with. And it was all part of a, and I bet you, by the way, watch this. It's going to be interesting. There are flight restrictions when a president of the United States is anywhere around you. You can't get anywhere near in a helicopter or certainly a plane. I don't know if that applies to a former president. I think it does to a certain extent. But I would, with the telephoto lenses that we have today and boats, since they're this particular mansion, not all of Obama's mansions are on the water, just a couple of them. This particular mansion is on the water. I hope to God that a enterprising young reporter with about a 5 foot long telephoto lens either gets on a helicopter or gets on a boat and is photographing the Obama's mansion this Saturday from afar, because you know that they're saying, oh, it's just going to be family and close friends now. It's not going to be George Clooney in a mall, probably not going to make it. I wouldn't be surprised if like 475 people showed up. they're just saying, no. But every one of them are either family or very, very close friends. They will publicly say they're not going to do this, but then they'll release some number. Well, it's only 200. You can believe Barack Obama has 200 close friends? Absolutely not. And how many servants will be there? I wonder if we'll ever get the truth about this. But they're at least pretending to care. What's also funny is Valerie Jarrett, Obama's brain. Remember her, the advisor that weirdly, like, doesn't seem to be able to exist without the Obamas. Just a weird, weird person. She tweeted out yesterday to celebrate Barack Obama's birthday. Make sure to give a donation to build the Barack Obama Presidential Center, his presidential library in Chicago. Now, the people in the South Side of Chicago don't want this monstrosity to vanity. They don't want it. They've been fighting it. Community groups have been fighting because the property could be better used for things that are much better than Barack Obama's vanity project. But he's pushing forward with it anyway because he doesn't give a damn. And he's begging people to donate. Anybody, any amount helps. You were about to at least have a party with 475 multi-millionaires and billionaires. Pass the hat, dude. It's your birthday. Maybe ask Jeff Bezos and Oprah to drop a diamond in the bucket to pay for your damn thing. Stop trying to hit up normal, real people to pay for your vanity projects. God, you look at this guy with scorn, and then every time you do, you think that scorn is absolutely, positively, 100% justified. Absolutely, every little ounce of it. Just so gross when rich people sit around and beg for money. Lastly today, I'm looking at the Twitter thing and I see the headline on the Washington Post about Biden's illegal order on the evictions moratorium. And this just lets you know. There's Biden's novel evictions defense, : maybe it's illegal, but it's worth it. Yeah, I think the same thing about bank robbery. Probably illegal, but it's definitely worth it. Good Lord, democracy dies right there in the editorial meeting, doesn't it, ladies and gentlemen? Yes, it does. That's all the time we have for today. Don't forget tomorrow, spread the word. You're not going to want to miss tomorrow's program, and you're going to want to share it with people, which you should share every episode. It is Paul, the American from Virginia, works and lives in China. And it's been a while since you've been back home. We talk about how difficult that is to make happen and all this. You're going to love it. And the Cursed program on Saturday morning, patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. Thank you guys for your support. I will see you tomorrow.